accession number 18668, real one.
Eric Peters, real one. Where were you born, please?
In Neston.
And Neston, we should say, is in the
Wirral. In Wirral, in Cheshire.
Which year was this?
15th of May, 1927.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Neston?
All of it.
So you were in Neston throughout the war years?
I was.
What was life like for a schoolboy in the Neston area in the Second World War?
I should say, no activities here, really. Had a few bombs dropped. Of course, that was all go around scrounging for metal fragments, see if we collect the most.
You were telling me why the bombs fell in this area. Can you tell me again?
Yes, I don't know if you know, at the bottom end of Neston, it's right on the marshes, and they built a decoy airfield in the middle of the marshes. And of course, used to leave a few lights on. And then many bombs, especially incendiary bombs, thousands of them was dropped onto this decoy airfield, so they wouldn't be dropped on Liverpool or Birkenhead or Wallasey, all the docks that was in those places. A lot of these incendiary bombs didn't go off. But once been in the salt water, they was ruined. And I think every household had a couple of incendiary bombs on the fireplace, polished up. We used to go out and collect them. Might have been dangerous, but...
Was any damage done to Neston Village?
None whatsoever. It's just a few farm fields, a few high explosive bombs dropped.
Did you find any of the bombing frightening?
Oh, yes. No, it was always during the night, and I'm a good sleeper. It must have been a good mile away, nearest to where I lived.
So there was no question of your being evacuated?
No, nobody was evacuated from Neston.
Did you go short of anything during the Second World War that you really missed?
Nothing what everybody else was short of, which they'd never had before, like bananas. And I think we lived fairly well. Being in the countryside, you could get the odd rabbit and things like that, which would help you with your rations.
So you must have hardly known that the war was on then?
Not really.
How did you come to join the army?
A friend of mine, his brother, was killed in Holland. He'd been a prisoner in the Far East, and he'd escaped and got back to this country, and then he was in the Loyal Regiment. And he got killed in Holland, so we, 70 years of age, we decided we'd all join up to end the war like heroes. But we was all too young, and only two of us, in 6 months later when we went back, two of us was accepted, and one wasn't A1, he was B2, so he could only join for the duration of the war, duration of emergencies as it was called. And he went in the RASC. I was the only one who passed A1. I was put my name down for the Loyal Regiment, because that's what my friend's brother was in when he got killed. And then I went to Mark Eaton Park, Derby. And also you meet other friends, and a friend from Wigan. Very, very good lad, and he said he was going to the Black Watch. Anyway, he converted me to join the Black Watch with him, and that's the reason I ended up in the Black Watch.
Where did you do the basic training for that?
Still at Mark Eaton Park in Derby, and then up to the Queen's Barracks, Perth, or also or living in the Dye Works, which was next door to the Queen's Barracks in Perth.
How did you cope with the basic training?
Oh, not much trouble, like, you know.
Which battalion of the Black Watch did you join?
None at that time. we've stationed at all Kim Thorne's Castle, Creef, quite a bit of Stone Palace, quite a few places in there around Perth. And then in January of 46, we were supported to Germany. But then at that time, there was about 10 battalions of the Black Watch joined the war in Europe. And it was all breaking up because the lads were getting demobbed. So there was no room for us in the first battalion, which was the only battalion that was going to be kept. So we were sent for all, posted to all different little areas, acting as a clerk for the lads who were getting demobbed. And then they had a really good posting in Germany. The final one, a place called Iserlohn. We was the defence company for the 1st British Corps. Well, there was more generals and colonels and brigadiers there than what there was privates. We used to go out to a little airfield and put the air sock up when the senior brigadier, senior general was coming in. Well, many of us leaving, like we'd do the same and take the windsock down and provide sentries, not with rifles, with the pick handles. Or during the day with nothing, you know. And at night time you'd have a pick handle. There was never no trouble, like.
So how long were you in Germany for?
I was back and forth to Belgium, a place called Tournai. I was stationed in Hamburg, stationed in Osnabrück. About 15 months in Germany altogether.
So we're talking about 46, 47?
46, 47.
How did you get on with the Germans?
Well, when we first went, there was no fraternisation officially, like. But when that was, I found them very, very good. A couple of places I was at, down at Tournai, I'm running back to the Fords, at Tournai and Bell. We used to have German prisoners of war who used to come and clean the billets out where the lads had slept. Because every other day we got a different intake. But the prisoners of war used to march up from the prisoner of war camp under their own third NCOs, not ours, like. And then the senior NCO would report to one of us. It was ever in charge of the blocks, and they would clean everything out, like, you know. And very bad. I'll give you an incident. I've already wrote it down somewhere. We used to play football against them, against German prisoners of war, but had to be in their camp, and they used to treat us, feed us with meagre rations, and all the cups were made out of tin cans, but no sharp edges or anything like that, you know. Brilliant, clever people. And one of the lads, we were talking about guns or something, one lad said to me, "Have you got a revolver?" I said, "Oh, I haven't got a revolver." The next day, he brought me one out of the prisoner of war camp. Like a silver aluminium six-cylinder revolver. And that's true, that. And a little incident about that. I was at Iserlohn, and I've fired it through the upstairs window. Only had some trees, couldn't come down anyone. And then, but the report was so loud, like, you know, so quick, hid the revolver. And a few days later, I went on a course to Bielefeld, about a 6 week course, something like that. And then when I went back, it had my locker, and there's the revolver. And anyway, the barrel was a bit mucky, like, so, a bit rusty and everything, you know, hadn't been cleaned. I put it straight away, hid it when I had to find the shot. So I thought, well, that'll clean it, I'll fire another bullet to it. And the same through the window, and all I was left with was the pistol handle. The rest had just disintegrated. I know I was stupid, but very, very, very lucky. All little bits was flying everywhere. But as I said, all outside, luckily, because I had it out through the window. That was Iserlohn. I enjoyed me staying in Germany. Like, yeah.
Did you ever have any trouble with any Germans?
No.
So it sounds as though there were no hard feelings then?
No, never. No.
What was the state of Germany in 46, 47?
Fantastic. Our people lived through, like, Osnabrück. We lived in German barracks in Osnabrück, that housed the German army. And now that wasn't touched, but that the town was absolutely flattened, and so was Hamburg. And some of the... Now, Iserlohn wasn't hardly touched. Well, I suppose it was no industries there, like. But Hamburg was was devastation, really terrible.
Were the Germans getting to grips with the situation?
They were, The mark then was worth about six, I think it was 40 marks to the pound at that time. What do you know? Two and a half.
And so, did you go from Germany to Palestine?
No, from Germany, came on then from Germany for 40 days. I was on for 40 days and then was posted to India.
With the 1st Battalion?
No, we were going to join the 2nd Battalion. The 2nd Battalion was already there. We was at a draft going to join them. That was in the... Oh. I've got the exact date. Do you want the exact dates?
No.
I've got the, I did 47. I've got the exact date in there when we sailed from Southampton. Anyway, we landed at Bombay. It took us about a week to get to Peshawar by train. Of course, the train is there, as you may know, there's no soft seats there. It's all wooden benches. So it's a matter of sitting down, and the next minute your bum is so tired that you try and have a little walk around, but there's not much room on the troop train. We used to have sentries either side, because people like to ride on your on the roof, like, you know, and things like that, but we wouldn't have that, like, I don't want to say we, the senior officer wouldn't have that. So we kept all the natives off. I think that's where natives, weren't they? Landed at Peshawar, up on the northwest frontier. Then we got on troop lorries, then, you know, and up to a hill station called Sherat. Chert. And that was just overlooking the beginning of the Khyber Pass. You know, it's so high up, look, some fantastic views. I mean, we didn't appreciate them. In those days at 18, getting on for 19, I suppose it was something like that, 19 then. The scenery didn't appeal to us because the hills meant you had to climb them. And so, but it was nice up there.
What kind of duties did the battalion have at Sherat?
Not operational duties, mostly all training duties. We was inspected up there by General Auchinleck, who was one of the desert rats before Wavell, or before Montgomery.
Anything that happened to you whilst you were in India?
Not especially. Things that... before we left Sherat, I went into hospital. Again, my own fault was heat exhaustion. You used to have a cup of salted water issued to you, and of course, being clever, like, as soon as the senior NCOs wouldn't watch in, you used to be thrown down in the dust, soon dry. But anyway, I suffered through heat exhaustion through that, and I was in hospital. And while I was in hospital, the battalion moved down back to Karachi.
What were the symptoms of heat exhaustion?
Just absolutely exhausted. It couldn't get out of bed.
I think you were there when partition occurred.
I was. Just outside this little station in Sherat, there was a bazaar, which is around, always around any army camp, you know, for your Dobie Wallace and your Buxie Wallace. And that was raided one night. We didn't hear anything about it, but we went next morning. We know there's a lot of shouting, but there's always a lot of shouting and noise and bangs, drums banging. But we went to the bazaar this one morning, and there wasn't a living soul. Everyone in the whole village had been slaughtered. They was lying in the streets, in the shop doorways, sleeping behind the counters, but they'd all been dead with these, like, kind of pangers, a cane with knives attached to the end of them, you know, and they'd been slashed. But everyone was dead, like, this would be through the they was mostly Hindus, and they, of course, were the Muslims at this time had attacked them. And then where some infantry, Indian infantry regiment, a mounted regiment, came and took over our camp, and they escorted us down to Peshawar, thankful to say, when we were on the train. And then going down on the train, the trains were going in different directions. And one, say, kind of 1,000 Muslims would meet one kind of 1,000 Hindus, And why they had to stop, or why the trains were stopped, I don't know. But then everybody was massacred. As we was passing, you see trains, and the bodies was piled up, thousands of bodies just left in the open wagons. And we stopped at Lahore, for hot water, and we just have to run to the engine to get some hot water, the steam at the engine to make a cup of tea, something like that. So it was about 20 of us. And you could hardly stand on the Lahore station for the dirt, you know, there was nobody cleaning anything like that.
You mean litter?
I mean dirt, human dirt, and everything, and even on the platform and everything. It's gone haywire, hasn't it? I mean, the people who served together, worked together, but as soon as petition come, that was it. Murder.
Was there any hostility shown to you? Or
none whatsoever.
Comrades?
None whatsoever, no. The only trouble we had, they wanted to ride on the top of our carriage, and our officer wouldn't have it. Like, we had sentries on either end and wouldn't let them get on the other carriages. You know, there's more on the top of the roof than what was inside the carriages, I think. But we wouldn't let any on ours. I think that was, say, if they had been, our train had been attacked, they wouldn't care who they was attacking. Everybody on that train would have been killed. Like, they don't care who, they don't stop and ask questions, do they? I saw some. Nothing, you know, which brings me to that people that these policemen now and firemen, and they're suffering from trauma. They're traumatised because they've seen a dead body or something and they want thousands of pounds. Like, that annoys me. I mean, the young lads out there see much worse atrocities than what they'll ever see.
So you were heading down to Karachi to
Karachi, live in. Yeah. And there, that was another place. That's about 17 miles outside Karachi. I've got the name of somewhere, I can't think of it. And we used to go fishing there with an officer, and they used to throw grenades in the river. And then 2 seconds after, all the fish was floating on the top, or in you go, and get your trout. And it was an easy way of going fishing. But we always had an officer with you who was in charge of the grenades, like, so there was no danger.
And you said you thought you were the last British troops out of Pakistan?
We were the last British troops. We marched through Pakistan. I've got photographs of the RSM and being presented with things.
And then from there you went to Palestine?
Yes. We thought we was on our way home when we left. When we sailed from Karachi, we were on our way home. That was the official thing. But when we got to Port Suez, they split the battalion in half. Not everybody, some still went on, where it was due. They'd done the service, like, it's like lads like us who had only done a couple of years and still had 5 to do. Split was on A to J went to the HLI, and K to the end of the alphabet went to the Argyles. So even if your best friend, like, was the front of the alphabet and you were at the back, it was just bad luck, you'd separated.
So this is the 1st Battalion of the Argyle?
It's the 1st Battalion of the Argyle and Sutherland Highlanders.
Were they much different from the Black Watch?
None at all. They welcomed us, I must say, very, yeah. Well, I know I'm jumpy, but once we went back to Britain, some of them did go back to the Black Watch. But I found friendship with quite a few Argyles, and so I stayed in the Argyles.
Where were the Argyles based in Palestine?
Sarafand, just outside Oslo Airport, Lida. I don't know if it's still called Lida. And then we did duties in Tel Aviv and Jaffa. Well, Tel Aviv and Jaffa is like, I don't know, I should say Neston and Little Neston. There's no dividing line. Well, it's a street separating the two cities, really. And we used to do patrols around all those places. That's where I've seen tanks mowing down orange groves because the Ergun Sum Levy or the Stern Gang had fired on different people. Anyway, they killed two British Army guard sergeant in the orange groves. So they just call it tanksten. And then, I mean, it technically takes 20 years for an orange tree to bear fruit. So that was, it was really like a deterrent to try and stop them firing on troops from the orange groves.
Was it frightening being in Palestine at that time?
It was nerve-wracking in the sense that we were still a young lad, and we was guarding Lida Airport. And you'd be on sentry duty, you know, at the corner of an airfield, you know, and there's orange groves all round you, kind of, and it's, well, not, it can't be all round you, but all round the back of you. And I always thought, what a stupid place, like, to, you know, you have to be really alert. If anybody could have crept up onto you.
Were you, did you ever have any bad incidents there?
No, not bad incidents. What was there, just a couple of hours from Sadafand, we was sent there. It had been a German colony of Jews. And it was they had their own church, like a little village, but it was all enclosed by barbed wire. And we used to have Ren gun carriers that used to go around, keep going round it, like all day long. With different lads in, like. And the Argyles, at the guard room, now, there's a bell there, big brass bell, and that was taken from the church, from this settlement. It's a settlement, that's the word we're looking for, a German settlement. And but when they left everything. You'd go in all the houses, and there'd be libraries, you know, the wall to wall of medical books, would, you know, where the doctors had lived and the priests had lived, and were beautiful, and but all the furniture, everything was left. There wasn't nothing taken, just what they could carry. I think. Why, I do not know. I think maybe in the Arab quarter, the land that they might have been isolated there, and of course you still need. Although they was growing their own food and everything in their settlement, well, I suppose they still need certain things, don't they? So they have to go out and get medicines or something there.
Whereabouts was this settlement?
Just outside Sadafand. Yeah. It must have housed, because there's a couple of hundred houses in it. And beautiful houses too, you know, and the furniture inside. It wasn't any tacky stuff. It was all beautiful stuff. Even the bedclothes, you know, that... as if they just got out of bed and left it like that.
But you told me earlier that you visited the site of an attack on a train with RAF personnel.
That happened in, I don't know what part of Palestine it was. It was a troop train, a troop ship, a troop train carrying their young RAF lads, mostly. And that got blown up. And quite a few lives lost there. And there was bits of bodies on trees and everything, you know, there was a... traumatised time, like.
What did you have to do when you went?
Only tidying up.
Helping a casualty?
No, the casualties had gone. It's a few hours after when we got there.
Was it the whole battalion that had to do that?
No, just a couple of companies.
Which company were you in?
C Company.
Remember your platoon?
Buchanan. Oh, good heavens. I think it was 9 platoon in C Company.
Any other memories from Palestine?
Not really. We know we played the airport staff, I remember that, at a football match. Jewish, really, and they give us a quarter of an orange at half time, and you're surrounded by orange groves. You know? I don't know if it was meanness as such, you know, I don't know, but it seemed funny, like you're surrounded by orange trees, you just help yourself, all right, and they give you a quarter of an orange each, like, at half time. Funny incidents.
So you left Palestine when the mandate came to an end?
We left there on the 14th to 15th of May in 48. Now, I remember that day specifically because that was my 21st birthday. travelling across the Sinai Desert, and then I've had a drink. Travelling all day.
Going to Egypt?
Going into Egypt.
Did you stay in Egypt or go somewhere
We stayed in Egypt for a few months. Around by the Bitter Lakes. I can't remember. What's the name of it?
This is the canal zone, isn't
it? Yes, the canal zone. Literally, more or less, well, not say the centre of the canal, but it's halfway through the canal, there's the Bitter Lakes. Ismailia, or Ismailia, that's the place. There was a bit of trouble then in Egypt, but we would have none there, like whatsoever. It was a rest camp there, in a sense. It was stationed right by the Bitter Lakes. Of course, you go for your swim every day, like. You know.
So, how did you go from Egypt to Korea?
We came home. Went to Colchester. Was at Colchester about 10 months, and then that trouble in China. A ship.
The Amethyst.
The Amethyst, yeah, up the Alley River. Now. So we've posted then to Hong Kong in 49. Early 49, must have been.
What was life like for a soldier in Hong Kong in
49? I think it was very, very good. Then at that time, there was plenty of places. We stationed at Fort Stanley when we first landed there. It was only there a couple of months, and then went up into the New Territories, which was all tents. There was no camps up in the New Territories, so just only tent things. Was that an experience when you had a typhoon, you had to strip your tents and be one this nut, which was for the main stores, and you all crammed into that wherever possible. And of course that was only for about 3 or 4 days while the typhoon was on. Good job, because you took your tents down, because when you go outside, there was nothing left. Anything that had been left had been blown away, like the rain. It was all right. It was just, young, it was only 22 or something like that then.
Did the troops like being in Hong Kong?
Oh, yeah, it was a good posting, yeah.
What was so enjoyable about it?
Well, everything was cheap. You know, you can get a suit made in a day. You know, you go down into the town, get in there early, and shark skin suit, and go back for one fitting, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock, and 9 o'clock, something like this, your suit was made for you, all wrapped up, and good tailors, like, you know, so, and there are plenty of good clubs there. The old club, the Navy club, the Union Jack club, the Navy club, some good clubs. But we didn't go down to town very often. You know, there was the beer house, and we had the Navy and the Corporal's Mess and things like that. So a local leave after every 4 months or something, you know, you'd get a few days to go down to, and there was a rest camp inside Kowloon, so you could stay there, like, and get drunk and do what you wanted to. Have your way, dirty women. Yeah, there's a good posting there, Hong Kong.
So, how did you get the posting to Korea?
We heard about.